Hi, this is Fabi Fav.
And this is Babelito.
And we are
Latinos Who Lunch, the podcast where we talk about important things like
Ay, no, amiga, qué fuerte. Hello, hello, hello.
Good show.
Oh my gosh, Babelito, we haven't talked in a long time. I feel like the last time we recorded was like a month ago, right?
It was in the Albuquerque Museum. It's been a while. How are you?
I'm good. Well, that's a lie. I'm not good.
¿Por qué, hombre?
You know, it's been a tough year for everybody, you know, like during the whole pandemic, and obviously for us, we've talked about it every other week on this show, you know. Mm-hmm. But like Latinos Who Lunch is coming to a close, and you know, one of the reasons why this is basically our last month is because we've gone kind of separate directions, and your career is taking off, and you know, I'm trying to cut back on stuff because I'm just always so busy, and I want to, you know, have a little bit of a personal life someday.
Right. what a concept.
Basically, like, this podcast was it for me. So, and I'm just so overwhelmed with projects right now because, you know, I got vaccinated and I started booking site visits and installations and trips everywhere. And I was so anxious last night that I could not fall asleep. Like, you know, like when I know you felt this, like when you can't fall asleep because your heart's beating so fast.
Yes.
Because you're like, you can't stop thinking about all the shit you have to do.
Yes. Oh,
that was me last night. I could not stop thinking about shit and just like, oh, I think, and I feel like it's also because I started to go out into the world now, like to do like outdoor stuff.
Uh-huh.
Like I went to the swap meet and stuff, you know, just like I'm trying
to
do like
safe
outdoorsy things. Yeah. And I had visitors last week. So like we went out bar hopping and stuff a little bit, like to places that were, you know, COVID safe.
Outdoors,
and
yeah.
And it just gave me so much anxiety.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm just going to stay in the house until I absolutely have to leave. but it's like this cycle where it's bad for me to be in the house too. Like, I feel like I'm not really doing anything. I'm just like in my own, you know, whirlpool of depression. So that's where I'm at right now. How about you?
It's the same. It's like reintroducing. We've gone to one restaurant and we went outside.
Yeah.
We were the only ones sitting outside. And even that was like, I want to feed my food. I want to go. I mean, it was great. It was so nice, you know. But reintroducing ourselves into the world, it's just, to me, it's been very complicated because I think I started withdrawing even a year before everything started. So the pandemic hit and it almost gave me an excuse not to leave, which now I'm understanding that was, you know, it's completely unhealthy. So it's been very complicated, but slow. I think being in Albuquerque is good because it's small, and in Santa Fe, it's small enough. I know people, but I don't know a shitload of people. So like the social gatherings is with like just a couple of friends, and I actually had some people over the house, and there were like 8 people in the house, which, you know, I don't remember the last time I did that. And it was wonderful, you know, but leading to that and preparing for that, it's so much harder than it used to be. Before it's like, oh yeah, everybody come over now. You know, it's supposed to like, let's plant a month in advance. Everybody's double vaccinated. And oh my God, like everybody's comfortable in the living room. Should we be outside? Like it's a lot. And same, like, I think in the past 2 months, I went back to my non-sleeping. And you know what happens? Like, I will be like, I always give myself, as I mentioned before, at night. Like, I eat dinner, watch a little bit of anime, have a beer, and go to bed. And that's like my winding down. But lately, I will be like falling asleep. It's like, a la madre, no contesté ese correo. And then that leads to like, oh, fuck, I forgot to do this. Oh, shit, I also have to do this. Oh, I cannot forget to do this. And then you just stay up. I've been I've been going to bed at 1 and falling asleep like around 5. Like that happens like at least 4 times a week, and it's like, it's getting to me, man. So I know exactly what you mean. It's, I think it's just reintroducing people into the world again. You know, it's like, it's a lot. But and also, like, I've been thinking a lot about coming to terms with, you know, the end of Latinos Who Launch, and that's also taking a lot of my thoughts during, mm-hmm. you know, at night. So it's complicated, but I'm also excited that we get to do a couple more episodes, and I have a couple of surprises for you, but we'll talk about it later.
What? I don't like surprises.
Sorry.
Yeah, don't do that. please. But what was I going to tell you? Oh my God.
Alguna mentira dice mi mamá. Oh my God, la Clemen yes. got Alexa.
Oh, girl, you better be filming these Alexa moments with your mom. She's like, Alexa, toca los bookies. What is she doing? What
exactly is she... that. Yes. She goes, Alexa, ¿cómo le hago para tomarme las medicinas en la tarde? I'm like, dude, no. You're like, you don't go that fast. And she's not going to answer complicated questions. And then as she said that, Alexa started talking about like vitamins. And instead of being like, Alexa, para, she's like, Alexa, ya, ya, Alexa, ya, ya.
Ya, ya.
Ya, cállate. Oh, it's so funny.
Oh, my gosh. Well, before we go on, because I want to ask you about food, because I want to know what you've been eating. I just want to say this at the top of the episode, because it gets lost. Thank you to everybody that's been supporting us on Patreon. I know I haven't been on there lately because I've been so busy, but like I said before, I'm working with Pickwick Independent Press in Portland, Maine. Really cool, queer spot, you know, in Portland. And they're making a Latinos Who Lunch poster for all the madrinas to thank you. So I have a bunch of... This is what I might do. I'll post the proofs because, you know, Pilar Nadal, who's been designing it, is like kind of sending images of what we're working on back and forth. So maybe as a teaser, I can send that. But next week, I'm going to get on the Patreon and start communicating with y'all because, you know, we'll keep it active through this month and next month. And then don't worry, we'll pause it. We'll stop taking your money. But we just want to make sure that y'all know that we love you. We appreciate your support. And because of the Patreon, we're able to do it another year, you know? So
right, that's right.
Thank you all. Thank you all so much. And feel free to also reach out to us via the Patreon directly through the messages. It's been so cool. That's Latinos Who Lunch /Patreon, y'all. Okay. What have you been eating, Babs?
Pues todo, güey. Like,
well, give me one thing, honey.
I told you I had people over and I didn't know what to make. And we're like, oh, let's make burgers. But I was like, ugh, like a, you know, like carne asada burgers. I wanted to do something different. Mm-hmm. So I made this big ass arugula spinach mandarin salad, and I just bake 2 full chickens just like that with a shitload of butter. It was so good. People loved it. And, you know, I've been embracing more than ever, my white lady fantasies after I bought my fucking coffee machine. And I went to Sonoma and got me a cutting board, a beautiful bamboo cutting board. So I display the chicken on that shit.
And then you went and got some yoni eggs. What are you doing? What are you, Gwyneth Paltrow now?
What is yoni eggs?
You need to Google it, loca, because I'm not going to get into that. Keep going.
That was amazing. But also, you know, like charcuterie board, or as Pat calls it, charcuterie board. and, you know, like I actually been cooking less. But thankfully, like Santa Fe has... decent food. So a lot of New Mexican stuff, man. Like a lot of New Mexican food. I just love it over here, though. You love it or hate it. And we talked about this many, many times. So that's mainly what I'm doing. I don't think I've been doing anything. I don't think I've been doing anything too exciting because just like you, like I've been booking a lot of stuff, and with good luck, I think I'm gonna be here for the rest of the year through December.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I'm very, very excited. But that's it, man. Nothing to report on that end. What about you?
So you haven't eaten one dish that's memorable in the last month. That's what you just said.
Well, like that I've made, because I like to talk about things that I cook, oh, so I can okay. tell people what I made. Yeah, like I just had papas con chorizo, güey, pero qué pinche flojera. Like, you know what I'm saying? So.
All right, that's all it, right. That's it, that's I mean, it. No shame in papas and chorizo, okay? Yeah, we all been there, honey.
¿Y tú qué show?
Well, I recently found that there's this really great Indian market by my house, and I thought it was just a grocery store, like an Indian grocery store to buy spices and things, you know?
Yeah.
Or like very specific ingredients for Indian dishes. But you know those really cool stores that have a little cafe or a deli in the corner?
Yes.
Girl, this place is it. And it's like, it used to be a Smart and Final. Do you guys know what Smart and Final is? You know what Smart and Final is, obviously.
Yeah, my mom calls it La Fina.
La Fina. Mm-hmm. La tienda más fina. And it's basically a restaurant supply store. And so the one, they actually, this is very interesting information. I don't know why I'm telling. They're actually built a new one by my house, and then that's why the old one is empty. So the one over here on East Tropicana, if anybody lives in Las Vegas, and basically on the very left of the rest of the whole grocery store, this like big warehouse grocery store, they just have like boxes and boxes. It's like all their extra storage, you know, like.
Como la tienda esa of downtown, remember they had this, I mean it wasn't Indian, but it was like a market, and like at the corner they had like one
yeah.
table. Yes.
Okay, Laos market. Yeah, yes. That was Laos market. But this one is like just like bags and bags and bags of basmati rice and stuff, but it's like their storage. It's like their storage warehouse and a cafe, so you can like eat in the warehouse. It's awesome. Anyway, I've been eating there, and so I've gone twice already, and I just order down the menu. And my favorite thing to do is just sit there and listen to all the white ladies ask why there isn't any pictures on the menu.
Ay, qué pendeja.
And the people are like, I don't know. If you don't know what it is, then I guess you're just not going to eat it. And I had to tell a lady last time I went, like, just Google it. If you want to know what it looks like, you have a phone in your hand. What are you doing? Anyway, shout out to masala fries. They're delicious.
And if you don't know what they are, Google it.
Google it, locas. Okay. All right. Well, let's take a little break, and we're going to get into this listener letters. And like we said, you know, we couldn't let you guys go on May 5th, because that was our 5th year anniversary. By the way, happy 5 years, bitch, and happy 200th episode. Look how unceremonious and over it I am.
Super unceremonious. Super unceremonious.
But it's like, it's been more than 200, because we used to do the minisodes. So it's like it's like 230 or something. But anyway, we want to do a couple more listener letter episodes for y'all. So please stop sending them, because we're not going to read them after today. So they'll just be in our inbox. So thank you to everybody that's been sending letters over the years.
Over the years, yes.
Oh my gosh, the listener letter episodes are my absolute favorite. But we'll get into that. All right, let's take a break. Oh my gosh. Babalito, I know you can't believe it. I know that you can't believe it, but there's still Latinos Who Lunch coloring books, and people better snatch them before they're all gone, okay? I know we've been saying that for a long time, but guess what? I printed more on accident. So,
you know,
there's still more.
That's good you tell me, because somebody tried to order one, I think a month or so ago, and I couldn't find it. But now you know it, and now there's some left.
They're there. They're yes. there. If you go to latinoswholunch.com/coloring book, it'll take you to a link. And our friends here in Las Vegas at this really cool bookstore called The Writer's Block sell them. So if you get redirected to that website, it's because they are helping us out by shipping everything and processing everything. They're really amazing partners with Latinos Who Lunch. Check them out. Buy more books from them. They're amazing. And yeah, and can you tell everybody a little bit about the book, Babs?
De la A a la Z. Del 1 al 11, de este a oeste, the ABCs of Latinidad, all the stereotypes you can think about, all the anti-stereotypes that you can think about, you can now have it in a coloring book, and, you know, you can even make embroidery out of that. You can do whatever you want, so make sure you buy your copy, and a copy para tu abuela, otra para tu tía, y otra para la vecina.
Yep, from anti-blackness to Zócalo, it covers it all.
To Zacatecas, that's my favorite.
Zacatecas. From alcoholism. Oh, no, okay, we're going to stop. No, okay. Yeah, and we're back.
So before we go into the listener letters, and because we're wrapping up this 5 years, I put together a little bit of a surprise, and it's a surprise that it's going to last a couple of episodes because I gather 1 minute audios from listeners, from fellow podcasters, from friends, and I thought that today was a perfect occasion that we can play some listeners' audios telling us why Latinos Who Lunch matters. That was the cue question that I ask everybody. And we can play some of this audio, and then we can actually read some of your letters. But also before we play, I just want to give a big shout out to Maite. I want to give a big shout out to Pat, to Eva, both from the Colores Radio, who use their social media skills to gather some people to record these things. We've been working on this for a couple of weeks. So Eva actually...
I was wondering how you pulled this off.
Eva actually block you from Twitter for a while so she could ask everybody. And thank you everybody who sent their audios again. This episode and next episode, I'm going to play them, absolutely all of them. But why don't we listen to our listeners first?
Okay. Let's do it.
And play.
Hi, I was just calling in to ask whether I'm brown enough to call myself Mexican. I'm really conflicted right now. I'm just kidding. This is Alma from Austin, y'all self-proclaimed prima. And I just wanted to say that you guys will be missed tremendously, obviously. Los queremos mucho. You guys are fucking hilarious. La primera vez que I heard
Thank
y'all,
you, prima.
Me tenían en el piso like llorando de la risa. I knew, like, I was a fan for life. Les deseo lo mejor a los dos. I love y'all, and I hope to see you guys soon.
Hi, this is Carolina. I'm from Illinois. I'm a college and career navigator. Latinos Who Lunch matters because the content, the information, your laughter, your excitement, everything about you both just matters. You're important to the culture, the history, and honestly, I have learned more through you than my years in college.
Shout
so out. Thank you so much for your words, your wisdom, your history, everything. Many blessings. Bye.
Hi, Babelito and Fabi Fab. I am so sad that Latinos Who Lunch is ending. I've learned so much from y'all, and y'all are so funny.
Oh,
I'm really
going to
miss
you.
Y'all chemistry on air and all the stuff that y'all taught us, and y'all just kept it a buck with us. So thank y'all for creating Latinos Who Lunch and for doing all of this work for us. We love it. We love y'all.
Hey, Fabian Babelito. This is Arlene, one of your Patreon patrons. I just wanted to send a huge thanks for everything y'all have done, but especially in this past year. You know, I know this pandemic is definitely still not over, but through some of those really dark and scary times, y'all were there and never afraid to be real, call people out, and also own your own stuff, which is a really beautiful thing to model for folks. So thank you for showing us what that looks like and for using your platform to do it, you know. And still, I even just today, my best friend texted me and was asking me, oh, did you listen to the episode that just dropped? And that's how it's been ever since we started listening together. And I want to thank you for giving us something to connect about and to bond over. Because that too is incredibly special and not something that you find every day. So we'll always be here. If y'all ever want to come back, you've got your listeners. We'll miss you so much, but we're sending you so much love, and we know exactly why y'all are doing this, and we know that it's going to be right now what's best for you both. And oh, we just can't wait to keep following you and seeing what the future holds for y'all. So sending you lots of love, and we hope eventually our paths cross in person at some point when it's safe again. But un fuerte abrazo, and see you later. Bye.
Hola, Babelito y Fabi Fab. Saludos de Long Beach, California.
It's Jenny Rivera.
Como muchos, me siento muy sad que este cuento ya se ha acabado. Y'all were
muy excited.
Such a beacon of light, humor. Like, y'all were really able to delve into deep ass topics, all while being funny. From Babelito's bologna sandwiches to Fabi Fab's RuPaul drag race references. Y'all,
yeah, I'm a basic gay. Thanks for pointing that out, bitch.
You know, and like, moving forward for me, like, y'all are the beacon of my inspiration and my storytelling. So, les deseo muchísima abundancia, mucho, mucho amor en el camino que les espera. Y un fuerte abrazo.
Todo lo que me sobra.
From Katie Ventura.
Hola, Fabi, Fabi, Babelito. Les quería mandar unos saludos, abrazos desde Dallas, Texas.
Come on, Dallas.
A big thank you for the podcast. I honestly can't thank Dallas. You enough for the recipes, recommendations, and laughs each episode. I became a frequent listener in August 2018 when I started grad school miles away in a very white state away from home and community. LWL got me through some of my toughest days because listening felt and always will feel like home. To me, so LWL sweet. Is community and taught me how to hold myself accountable in my own personal growth. Aunque esté un poco agüitada que se acabe el podcast, I'm excited for all the amazing things y'all will do on your respective journeys. Con mucha admiración, Caro.
Fabi Fab, Abelito, thank you, thank you, thank you for bringing us so many laughs while giving us the Latina education we all need and deserve. You guys are like the queer primos I wish I had, but
you
I don't,
do have them. They're just, you know, in the closet.
Chismo, homophobia. So thank you for being your full and authentic selves with us. You created a show that is truly radical in its very being. I wish you two all the best and whatever the future holds for you. Sending you lots of love from Oakland, California. Take care. Bye.
Hi, Latinos Who Lunch. As a proud madrina of this podcast, I wanted to say thank you so much for every single episode you have created. You both have changed my life, and I have learned so much. Thank you for making me laugh and for bringing me so much joy every time that you release a new episode. My goal is to someday meet you and be able to give you a big hug and a big thank you in person. But for now, I'm sending you both a big abrazo, and I can't wait to see what is next. Thank you again.
Hola, Fabi. Hey. Babelito. This is Ariel. Saludos from Austin. This is definitely a bittersweet moment, but I just wanted to say thank you. You all paved the way for so many in this space, and so many of the podcasts could not have been started without you all creating this space. Thank you for bringing us laughter and realness, and for being yourselves with all of us. We're all definitely going to miss our LWO Thursdays, but we know you all will continue to do amazing things. Much love to the both of you, and thank you again.
Hello, this is Clarissa. I just wanted to send a thank you message to Fabi Fab and Babelito from Latinos Who Lunch. Thank you guys so much for making an awesome, truly unique podcast that was a safe space for everyone, and to just hear you guys talk about art and what's going on in the world, and hearing you speak your truths and bringing so much comfort to myself when I was feeling homesick away from home in Texas when I was on the East Coast. I met these guys at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and I've been binging their podcast ever since. They're amazing and so insightful, and I just wanted to say thank you for everything you've done and all that you continue to do.
Wow, thank you so much, listeners. Oh, and there were some fellow podcasters in there. That was very sweet.
there's more to come. Also, shout out to Pam, because Pam reached out to some of her group of wonderful women.
Who's Pam?
Pam from Café con Pam. Pam. And there's more. I have some friends of the podcast who also wanted to say a couple of things, but we'll play those messages after we read some listener letters, porque después nunca vamos a terminar, güey. Así que let's get to work.
Cool. Well, I'm so happy you're editing this episode, Babs. Let's get to the letters. Okay, do you want to do the first one or should I?
Go for it.
All right, Eva G. or Eva G, sorry. Imposter syndrome. ¡Qué dolor! Hi, Fabi Fabi Babelito. I am 25, and in the past 2 years, after I got my BA, I wanted to apply to this amazing master's program, but imposter syndrome kicked in. This year, I'm getting myself together and will apply to the master's program of justice studies at San Jose State University. I am the first in my family to apply and continue pursuing higher education. In the back of my mind, imposter syndrome is still alive and there. How do you push forward? Cada momento de mi vida, I am terrified. I feel that I am a brown Latinx woman y tengo que luchar más. Cuídense and keep eating great food. A tired mujer. Eva G. Oh, man. I don't know. What advice can you give, Babs?
You know, es que para mí, it never goes away. I remember like in my first or second year of grad school, my advisor said that to me. Like we had like a carne asada or whatever. It goes like imposter syndrome doesn't go away. So you need to learn how to manage it. And especially when it comes to like, I don't know. Like I don't know if it's a Latino thing or like a BIPOC thing, but it's what I'm learning with age is that everybody has it. It's just that everybody performs it and hides it in a different way. And the people that don't have a little bit of fucking shame, those are the people we don't like. So I think it's understanding that when you have to perform the things that you do, when you have to perform power, when you have to perform certain things, you have to always do it from a place that not only makes you comfortable, but always keeping the eye on the, how do you call it? Como the eye on the target. So regardless of what's going on, it's just about the final goal. So like every time, for years, every time I taught class, and by every time I mean every single day, I was like, I'm going to be called out and I'm not the expert on this. And I had to like start telling myself, no, like I am the expert on most of these things in front of this audience, and it's about a conversation. Like there's so many things that I have started to tell myself, but every time I do a Zoom presentation, I'm doing one on fucking Yale University this week, and I'm so nervous, but I'm just like, you know, like they invite you for a reason, they hire you for a reason, you know, you got accepted for a reason. So you have to like, again, keep the eye on the prize, make sure that you know why you're there. And understand that everybody goes through this. Every single person. Y como Latinos, güey, a veces es muchísimo más pesado. And I had this conversation with one of my students over text. And I said, it's just like, you have to understand what a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful scholar you're becoming, right? But because we don't hear it every day, or because we don't have enough people to get our feedback, it becomes complicated. So learn to live with it, but also learn techniques to you know, to manage it, because it's important, you know?
Yeah. I don't think imposter syndrome is forever. I actually think that I've gotten over it in a lot of instances. Sure, there's some things that I'm not comfortable with and that I feel like I'm out of place, but I don't know. I've been in like the museum art game for over 5 years now, and I feel like today, the person I am today compared to the person I was 5 years ago is a completely different person. I go in asking for my checks immediately now. I ask for what I want when I used to be afraid to do so. And that's just because of faking it in the beginning. Because, yeah, I had imposter syndrome, but I had to fake this confidence because a lot of these institutions or the way things work really aren't made for us. Or
correct.
We just don't come from that background, so we don't really understand how that things work. So it was a lot of trial and error for me. It was a lot of just saying yes to things that I had no idea what I was saying yes to. But currently I find myself, you know, being more free to say no to things and to putting my foot down. Like, for example, I got a really amazing gig in New York later this year. And they were like, hey, what do you feel like if we could do a live stream of you while you make this art piece? And then, you know, maybe visitors can kind of take a peek. And I was just like, absolutely not. No, I don't like being watched. I don't like being on display anymore. Like, I used to do that before because I thought that was just what museums did and that's what I was expected to do.
Right.
But I'm there to do a job. I would prefer it if I could just go there, do my job, and leave. Like, I don't want to be a fucking animal at the zoo. And they're like, oh, yes, of course. Yes, we're sorry. I'm like, yeah, you are.
Más te vale.
So, you know, like, it's like you just... And that just comes from years of me putting up with bullshit. So get ready to deal with a bunch of bullshit. And then finally, you're going to find your voice and know your fucking worth.
¿Y sabes también lo que pasa, güey? Like, I don't know. You turn 30 and it, like, you just don't give a fuck no more. You know, like, it's just like, one of the things that has helped me know that the discipline that I practice, or the discipline in which I'm practicing my work, it's oppressive and colonial as fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So when you know this, you're like, half of this stuff is bullshit. So, like, why even pay any attention to that? Go do what you have to do and get out. So, but that, you know, that comes with time.
Yes. All right, Babs, we have a similar email next. Do you want to go for it?
Okay. Soon to be a Berkeley grad, imposter syndrome, Wellesley College, and Los Spookies, Santo Niño de Atocha. Hi, Latinos Who Lunch. I've been a fan for a long time and cannot live with myself if I don't write to you before the podcast goes into hibernation. Ooh, I like that. You two got me through some long commutes and long training runs, too. Thank you for putting a smile on my face and making me forget I was actually exercising. But that was a long time ago. Now I don't commute or run. Okay, I'm a Wellesley College alumna. I was blessed to take my first gender studies class in college with legendary Professor Irene Mata. Bless. I love that you all went to my campus a few years ago. I picture you, the students, and Professor Mata enjoying the chisme in the hollow halls of my campus.
Harry Potter-ass looking halls. I loved it there.
Where on campus did you record? I graduated in 2013, so long before you made it out there. Fun story you will appreciate. My huge Mexican family took over Wellesley College when I graduated, or as some of them say it, Wellesley. Wellesley.
Wellesley.
Wellesley. Picture this, 22 family members ranging from 6 months to 82 years. They traveled from Southern California and Mexico City to see me walk that stage, as I was the first in my family to graduate from college. I had to cut off 2 rows of seats on the quad's green lawn to make sure that they all had a place to sit. It was super hot, humid spring day in Massachusetts that one of my cousins passed out from the sun. I guess Wellesley couldn't afford a tent that year, LOL. I had the loudest cheer that day. My extended family was even asked to cheer for another student who didn't have a lot of family attending. Honestly, we should start charging. Later that night, after my graduation dinner, I gave my family a walking tour of Cambridge, and my family was so hyped to be touring around that when we walked by Cambridge fire truck, they ambushed the truck and got inside for the photo opportunity. I love your family. Se pasan mis tías y primos. But ignoring the craziness of that day, it felt surreal to see them all cheering from when I walked on the stage. Anyways, I'm finishing graduate school this spring, and the maldita pandemia is robbing my family of more memories like those. It won't be possible be the same Argüende in a Zoom commencement. Boo. So I'm writing to get you your advice for re-entering the workforce, this time with a grad degree. I'm feeling all sorts of imposter syndrome, and I'm not even there yet. How do you two deal with when you finish your grad programs? How did you seek mentors? It feels like the world is my oyster again, and whatever that saying is, and I want to seize every opportunity. How did you navigate setting direction in your career? I'm entering an industry where there are not many Latinas like myself doing the work I'll be doing, and I want to feel like I'm set up to succeed. I would love your words of wisdom navigating this upcoming changing my life. I think this will help also other listeners entering the workforce this year. Oh, and lastly, do you ever watch Los Spookies on HBO? It came out in 2019, in the summer of 2019, and I just watched it this winter. It was so quirky and entertaining. I love the magical realism. Would love to hear your thoughts on this series. Muchísimas gracias por todo lo que hacen. Los voy a extrañar mucho. Sincerely, soon to be a Berkeley grad. That reminded me a little bit of my graduation.
Oh my God, yeah.
There was so many of us, remember?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think it's a little bit of the same advice. But I also think that, again, if they hire you, it's for a reason. And you have to own it. And I think one of the things that you don't find out till you're actually doing the work is that you know way more than you think you do. So, like, you have to marinate on those successes, marinate on that information as opposed to, like, fuck, I don't know that. It's like, well, I don't know that, but I know all of this other stuff. So I think it's a matter of just, like, mi papá siempre me dice lo mismo, and it's so cliche, but, like, it really has helped me navigate everything I do. And he always says, agarra el toro por los cuernos. And there's so many times that I am presented with a project and I'm like, nope, that's not me. Like, I don't have the expertise. And then I hear my dad, agarra el toro por los cuernos. And I just do it. And I fucking, you know, like, and I make it work.
So let's see. Let's get to the specific questions. How did you two deal with it when you finished your grad programs? Well, I never went to grad school. So Babs, how about you?
I was adjuncting, and at that point I had been adjuncting for several years, and I was just sick of it. So I just kept pushing and pushing, trying to get something. I felt like that when I got my first visiting gig. I was like, what am I doing here in a fucking big ass city in this college? But the eye on the prize, I was there for the students, and I'm still there for the students. By the way, I just got tenure track last week.
So snaps circle. In a circle for you.
Big, big, big circle. So,
yay, congrats. That's a huge deal.
Ay, finally, güey, son desmadre.
I have always been a hustler. I have always had multiple jobs. So I don't relate to this because when I was in school getting my BFA, I already had a full-time like administrative job at a museum.
That's true.
Like many people that are young and enthusiastic about their field, they will work for free for years. And I worked for free at this museum for years, basically. And then finally, and I know somebody that probably worked with me is going to be like, I got paid $9 an hour when I entered that museum. Shame on that fucking museum for paying me that. But anyways,
right.
The only fucking person of color working there also. Anyway, I'm not mad about it.
Ya lo superé.
And also the museum was in a predominantly black and brown neighborhood, but I'm not mad about that. Okay. And they don't care about it. Okay. But I do wish, you know what? I do wish now that I look back at my schooling, my education beyond high school, I wish I would have been more in the moment. And because I used to kind of look down on people that like just took out loans and went to school, because I was like, I had two jobs and went to school and, you know, and had an art career, you know, and was trying to upstart my art career, you know. And right. So I wish I would have taken a step back and really cherish the time I had in school to really, I mean, I had a community because we were all hard workers, but you know, I didn't allow myself to really do my best in school because I was already thinking about like having a job secured before
next.
I even graduated.
Yeah.
But you know, the next question relates, how did you seek mentors? I did it through just anybody that I admire. I make sure to ask them if they need help or to invite them to lunch, or you can't be shy about that shit. You know, like if it sounds so corny and eye roll inducing, like, but networking is a huge deal when, especially when it comes to academia, You got to show up to lectures. You got to show up to art shows. You got to show up for other academics. So they see you, they start seeing your name, they start seeing your face, and then they'll start hiring you for things. And I know that that's the case for you too, right? In the art history world.
Yeah, like you just have to start doing, you just start attending lecture. And you know what? One of the things that I always tell my students, and they're always shy and also imposter syndrome, reach out to that scholar. If you read that book and you want that scholar to be in your committee, or you want that scholar to read your thesis, or you want that, you know, like a little bit more information about that research, reach out to them. Like, you'll be surprised. We're a bunch of losers. When we hear that somebody actually read our shit, we get so excited.
You're not losers, you're nerds.
We're nerds. But we get so excited. And I think, yes, we're busy or whatever, but like, you have no idea how exciting it is to know that there's a kid on the other side of the country that read my article and wants to learn more about the stuff that I do. Because that's why we do what we do. So I actively seek those mentors. But at the same time, life is also, you know, sometimes it's tough because you seek that mentor and you're like so excited to meet that scholar. And you finally meet them personally. And it's like, wah, wah, wah. So seek them, seek advice, seek people that are going to be good for your career, but also life will give you the people that are always going to help you and going to be there for you. Like, and you won't realize it until you just have your circle of mentors, you know?
Yeah. Okay, lastly, did you ever watch Los Spookies?
No, wait, ¿tú los vistes?
Yeah, it's a good show. It's pretty funny. I recommend the playlist. Their official playlist on Spotify is really good. It's fun. It's that weird Julio Torres kid. He's like a
I've seen his stand-up. It's pretty funny.
He plays like this rich chocolatier, and then him and his friends, that's how they have the money to do this new business where they're like the opposite of Ghostbusters. Like, they'll go into a place and set it up so it seems like it's haunted.
Oh, wow.
So it's like, it's really funny. It's really funny.
That sounds cool.
But it's definitely, a full disclosure, it's definitely like white people humor made into like Latinx.
Para los Latinos. I mean, yeah. I got lost when the listener said, I love the magical realism. I was like, oh.
Yeah, so that's the nice part about it. But it's definitely like an NBC, like SNL-backed show. Because Julio writes for SNL, and he's friends with all those people. So it's, you know, it's got the budget. It's good. It looks great. It's funny. God but bless. it's definitely a very, very distinct type of comedy. You know what I'm saying?
Very distinct. Okay. Thank All right, you next so one. Much.
Yes.
Dale.
All right, Jody. And she asked some questions about Drag Race. Here we go. First time, long time. I love your show, and I'm sad that you're consciously uncoupling. Come on. Another wow. another Gwyneth Paltrow reference? Wow.
Jesus Christ.
However, I'm thankful for the years and hard work that you've put into Latinos Who Lunch. I recently started watching Drag Race after your show, and others talked about it. You should have heard the way that I screamed when I heard put yourself together in real life. I've watched season 1 through 6. Ooh, I'm on season 6 right now. I started rewatching it. And then the last 3 seasons, and something has been bothering me about the show. What do you think about the way the show treats Latinx queens? In the first few seasons, there were lots of queens from Puerto Rico, but I haven't seen any in the later seasons. The Puerto Rican queens were always criticized for their accents, and their hard work was constantly discounted. As a black woman, I can say a lot about, well, a lot, LOL. Drag Race remains a problematic fave for me nonetheless. Thank you again for your work. I wish you all the best as you prepare for your next steps. Green heart, green heart, green heart. Sincerely, Jody. Jody, thank you. I think Jody went to our live NYU show. Shout out to you.
Shout out, Jody. You can listen to episode 1 to 100.
Yeah, we
listen to us complain about Latinx representation in that fucking show. Oh,
it's pretty bad. I mean, I actually... It's a bummer that there's not more Puerto Rican queens on there, but that the archetype like Alexis Mateo or Yara Sofia or...
Which we love, by the way.
Yeah, Linacia Sparks, you know, like They're beautiful. Oh my God, April Carrion, she's my fucking fave, bitch. And so they kind of stopped doing like the Puerto Rican queens after
Valentina, no? After that.
Cynthia Lee Fontaine, yeah, maybe. Yeah. Like,
not Valentina that she's Puerto Rican, but like, she was so successful that then, I don't know, I think they stopped the Puerto Ricans.
Which, in a way, I kind of see that as progress, because this past season, we had Denali, who's like an ice skater, who's Mexican-American from Alaska, which was really cool to see.
Oh, cool.
That representation. We had Candy Muse, who's Afro-Dominicana, which was cool. If you watch the final lip sync, she like took out a Dominican flag. That's never happened on the show.
That's cool.
Olivia Lux, she's, I believe she's half Puerto Rican, but they never, because, you know, I think she looks African-American, whatever that's supposed to mean. They never talked about it until like one of the last episodes, you know?
Yeah.
So there's always been queens like that, like Bianca Del Rio, Adore, Ginger Minge, that are Latinas, but that's not like their personality.
Right.
And I feel like because of the accents, the show pushes that like quirky, like they don't know what they're saying and I don't care because it's so funny, which is so offensive, because like Alexis Mateo proved, especially when she came back on All Stars the second time, that she was the fucking queen. She's a badass.
Right.
And not just a fucking caricature of a Puerto Rican drag queen, you know? But I think a lot of it also has to do with like the fat phobia / xenophobia / obsession that RuPaul has with fashion queens. Mm. And most of the Puerto Ricanas that are on the show, for example, are more pageant queens. They're transformistas. They're like, you know, it's like a different culture in Puerto Rico.
In Puerto Rico, correct.
Yeah, so I think if you've watched the last, since Violet Chachki, I think it's like been a fashion queen that's kind of won or been regarded as like the best. I mean, other than, you know, of course you have Bob the Drag Queen and like the comedy queens that sneak in, but specifically this last season of Drag Race, you had Gottmik, who's like an incredible Hollywood makeup artist and has a lot of money, so they can buy
whatever they want,
whatever amazing garments they can. Then you had Simone, who has the House of Avalon, all her white friends to back her. Not saying that she's not a hard worker, she didn't deserve to win, but you know, there's access there that not a lot of the queens have, which is a whole nother issue that the show needs to really address, is how much money these queens have to put in just to be on the show, because they have to have like at least 20 to 30 looks made. That's like $20,000,
and that's,
you know,
something that
minimum
and that's something that started changing slowly, because it wasn't like that in the beginning. Like,
girl,
it really was like they
go
struggle
back to season three. Go back to season three, they're literally wearing like Charlotte Roofs and shit. Okay.
Yeah, and this one, like, that was, I remember, like, it's as the seasons progress and the shit getting more produced, like, it was more exciting, but also more of a turnoff, because there's something about the first seasons that you got everything, you got to see creativity on stage, right? You got to see a lot of different things that this high production, you know, kills a little bit. But I'm also, I never really look into this, and maybe you know a little bit more, but like, I wonder who really the producers are, because it depends on the fucking producers.
All white people, girl. World
exactly.
of Wonder, please. They all look like zombies. They all look like fat zombies.
Surprised.
And I'm not fat shaming, I'm fat. But if you want to go, just go look, just Google WOW Presents or WOW World of Wonder and see who all the executives are.
And that tells you that, you know, like what we end up seeing is their fucking fantasies about the Caribbean, you know, and the fantasies about the Caribbean, girl, they date back to 1493. So like they ain't no better than fucking Christopher Columbus. So that's a result of that shit.
And I'm not saying that the show's doing better at the Caribbean, Latin Caribbean, Latinx Caribbean or whatever representation. I think they just stopped they were being criticized so much for the way that they would put like dumb music, you know, like Spanish guitar or clown, yeah, or like clown music behind whenever the Latinx queens talk, that they were criticized so much that they just stopped including Puerto Rican queens. Or because there's Drag Race España, which starts at the end of this month, and maybe they're thinking about doing a more of a Latin American drag race, they stopped including those queens because they're thinking about franchising. Because I know they have La Más Draga in Mexico, but who knows, maybe Drag Race has Drag Race Latin America in the works, you know. Or they also had that show The Switch, which was Latin American. Mm-hmm. So maybe they stopped giving the Puerto Rican queens a platform on Drag Race
because
there's the Switch, or there's going to be something else, which is kind of fucked up because Puerto Rico, you know, is part of our country, even though it's not in many ways, which it's the same treatment all around for Puerto Ricans, damn, even on Drag Race, which is so sad.
It's so interesting that when we started this podcast, it was almost like cultish. The way we talked about it.
It still is.
Is it though? Like, it just seems so mainstream, and I see drag culture everywhere, you know? Like, it just seems so different. I don't know.
It's
like,
it's mainstream, but like the people that are like really into it, like I'm really into it. So it's like, I listen to all these podcasts about it. Like, I'm really into it. But I think a lot of people just watch it as like they watch The Bachelor, you know, right, like it's not right. Like, and it's just like a silly show they have in the background. I think most of their viewers are like that. And then there's like the gays that are super into it. And then the 14-year-old girls that are super into it.
Correct.
You know, correct. And that's it. And then so, yeah, it's definitely, like Jody says, it's a problematic fave of mine because there's a lot to be critical about with Drag Race. And now that there's different franchises like UK, they just started Down Under, which is Australia and New Zealand. Like, you can see the differences in how they treat the queens, you know, based on race or nationality.
Hijo su madre.
So, yeah, but we got some amazing stars from the show. Shout out to Alexis Mateo, who now lives in Las Vegas. Shout out to James Mansfield, who just moved to Las Vegas, which is crazy. And also, shout out to Yara Sofia, who's from here, and she's going to be on the next All Stars. So I'm really excited to see her on TV again. Hopefully she makes it far.
Exciting. That's awesome.
And I don't know if that information is out yet, but I think, I don't remember.
Sorry.
I don't remember if I found that out behind the scenes or whatever, it's out now. Shout out to Yara. Okay. So, yes, that was our little Drag Race moment. You want to, let's read. Well, we have a couple more if you want to try to get into them, Babs.
We can do it. Let's do it. Let's do at least one more. Okay. Edel. Title, Preguntas. After graduating from art school, I was assisting an older white Jewish artist who was kind to me, but will also sometimes show her benign racist views. One time she asked me if I had thought about creating work about my Mexican heritage. Here we go. Pointing to example friend's artist she had. I didn't know what to say to that because it felt as though she was saying, quote, by doing that, you can really make it, maybe, end of quote. That question made me feel like I was ignorant about knowledge on my own culture and heritage. And if anything, also made me feel ashamed. Now, of course, I realize that our culture is our own and based on our particular and unique lived experiences that may take from our parents' upbringing, but also pop culture influences, among others. Question. How do you advise young artists encountering a situation like this now? And our professor or other artist professional suggesting they create something that reflects their Latinx background. Favi, I can see how your approach proved fruitful at the end, but would you have responded differently through art to that professor now? From listening to your latest episodes, it sounds like the podcast is coming to an end. Is that true? This will be a great loss, but I will...
Yes, girl.
Yes.
The fuck? Just kidding. We love you, Edelweiss.
But I also understand you both have careers and other projects to tend to. Just hoping we can still hear you both from time to time. Question. Favi, do you plan on continuing with your Art People podcast, which is also great, and or do you have another podcast in the works? Babelito, do you plan to continue in the Unsettling Journeys YouTube channel? I hope so, as I feel it helps so many of us learn about the role of art in our cultures. Every episode is truly eye-opening. That's all for now. Hope you're both well, and I look forward for the next Latinos Who Lunch episode. Su comadre, que los quiere y les desea lo mejor. Edel. No sé cómo se pronuncia.
Wow.
Okay.
Gregor. Okay.
Question number one. How will you advise young artists encountering a situation like this?
It's hard, girl. It's hard, hard. I mean, I remember the day that I was pushed to make art about my identity in art school. I was taking this like contemporary art class, and one of my professors kindly like checked out a bunch of books from the library and just like kind of put them around me. And it was this contemporary artist that was like Latinx from Miami. I don't remember their name, but they did like very stereotypical like Latinx imagery. The one I remember is like of a woman in a nail salon, like with really long nails, like Latina, like picture like a Cali Uchis. And then she's like floating like the Virgen de Guadalupe, kind of like in this beauty shop. It's like a photograph, very David LaChapelle, you know?
Wow.
And I was like, oh yeah, this is really cool. And I got the hint, like maybe you should make art about your identity and your culture, you know? And I wasn't offended by it. I was just like, oh, I didn't know the work looked so contemporary that I was like, oh, okay, this is like a contemporary take on Latinx artwork. You know, it wasn't like, I don't know, like a self-portrait like Frida, you know, or like a, you know, some artisanal reference, you know, to like some you know, like papel picado work or, you know, corny shit like piñatas like I do, right?
Right.
And so, yeah, I don't know. I think I was always aware that that's what white people wanted from me. And so I eventually just made my artwork about that and was very open about it. But the optics of it is very different. Like when people see my work, I don't think they see that it's a response to the expectations. People just think that I am playing along. You know what I mean?
Right, that
I really care deeply about the work that I mean, I do care deeply about the work that I'm making,
it's too weird.
But I don't think they see the institutional critique a lot of times within it, which is something that I'm still trying to balance and figure out how to make sure to portray that message so that it doesn't, you know what I mean? So that it's like I'm highlighting that because I do find that interesting, you know?
But even that, like, did you approach your art with that perspective in the beginning or you were like slowly realizing you were doing that, or you started to do that more and more and more as the expectations kept getting like more and more fucked up, you know?
Yeah, honestly, my art always has referenced art history, so
yeah,
I was doing that from the very beginning. It just went more towards using Latinx and Mexican and Guatemalan symbols because that's what I was getting curated into. So it's not just one professor's fault. It's just like institutionally throughout museums, throughout galleries, throughout art centers or whatever. That's kind of what they expect. And then I remember getting to the point where I was like, oh, these people hired me in November, October, November. They want me to do a fucking Dia de los Muertos thing. God damn it.
Here we go.
Right. But then there was this instance where they're like, no, we don't want that. We didn't want that. You just suggested it yourself because I thought that's
oh,
what you
shit.
Thought we wanted. And I was like, oh, I was just trying to save time on the phone call. So I was just trying to get the meeting over. You know what I mean? Like,
that's kind of
I was just so over it at that point. So after that experience, I just started to pay more and more attention. That's kind of my hook, you know? So I'm rambling because I don't have an answer for you. It's really hard. In this country, white people can make art about anything. People of color, to be able to show in big institutions, they either have to be so aligned with the white culture, shout out to RuPaul, that it doesn't, you know, they could be treated as a conceptual artist among the other whites, or it's about your trauma, it's about your history, or it's a reference to the greater white canon, right? So it's hard. And I'm reckoning with that right now, and it's kind of depressing, but at the same time, there's a lot to be said, and that's exciting, you know?
And at the other side, it can be very empowering.
Yes, precisely.
So to me, there's two things here in play. First mm-hmm. is the politics of authenticity. To mm-hmm. understand how authenticity works, not only how people expect you to perform that authenticity, but the ways in which you perform that authenticity. And that shit changes because authenticity, Latinx authenticity for white people when Trump got elected, versus today, it was two different experiences, right? So understand where these fucks are coming from. It's important. So understand the context, understand the cultural background. All of that is important to really understand what's behind that. Like, why don't you make art about your identity, right? Because you may think something, and you may think that your identity is something, but they might think something else. It's all about authenticity. It's all about how they want to be authenticated in their fucked up fantasies about what mm-hmm. Latin America is supposed to represent. That's one. And the second one is, and almost to close 5 years of answering questions, that identity is not a fixed entity. It's a fucking process. So every time we get these emails like, soy Latino, soy Latina, y no sé qué hacer porque I am not Latina enough. That's you saying that Latinx or Latino identity is one thing, and that's it. Mm-hmm. But no, it's a process, and it's changing, and it's a lot of different things. And as you say, it's about the different experiences. So to understand any identity, from gender to class to race, to understand identity as a process, and to understand a little bit of the politics of authenticity, of how they may affect you, I think could also, that's what I'm saying, on the other side, it can be fucking empowering. So the next time you're pushed to do something like that, or the next time you sit down to say, am I gonna do this or not, you have to think about these two things. And I feel like that could be very beneficial, you know, to, and not just in terms of art, but like, and going back to the other letters, like, how are you going to perform identity in this new job? You know, is it going to be against you or not? Or like, are you performing something that is contraproducente? Like, I know, I don't know. Like, it's just so many things at play. But I really do feel that at the heart of all these questions and many questions that we've gotten in Latinos Who Lunch before, it's that issues of authenticity and issues of identity as a fixed entity. And I just really like was able to put this in words because I've been reading the scholarship of Patricia Fields, and she talks about that, but she also talks about race, about whiteness as race, because people think it's like we all have race except for white people. Mm-hmm. So like flipping these conversations, flipping this sort of thinking, it's been like eye-opening, you know? So anyway, that's what I wanted to say.
Yeah, we have to read the next email because it's about this too. But before we get to that, the Art People podcast will continue. And I think, Babs, your Unsettling Journeys YouTube channel will still be posting, correct?
Yes. And I mean, we're going a little bit slow with the more produced videos just because they take a long, long, long time. But like, we just posted the interview with Josie Lopez about Frida for Latinos Who Lunch. So every time there's like an interview, every time there's an opportunity, borderless culture, cinema, like all the interviews are all there. So we have filmmakers, scholars. So we're adding content as much as we can, but we're definitely going to continue doing this.
Sweet. Thank you so much for your email, Edel. And now we're going to go to Jay, identity-based work in an academic world. It's so interesting that we get the same questions for 5 years. We've been getting the same. That's why it's so funny when Anma was like, hi, I'm brown, but I don't think I'm Latina enough. Okay, here we go. I'm an emerging artist making identity-based work about race and ethnicity, and I'm getting to the point in my career where for some of my older work no longer where some of my older work no longer reflects how I feel. There are even a few pieces that I find problematic after years of personal growth. I use my artwork to develop and document my identity, and in our cancel culture, prevalent world, I'm finding the fear of what my future self and future world will think of my work is really starting to confine my work, and more importantly, it's stunting my personal identity development. I'm also a newly minted university professor, so I'm struggling to navigate how to share my very personal identity development-based artwork and research through the context of academia. Yikes. Do y'all ever look back at your artwork, research, or projects and see things that you disagree with now? Does this cause any anxiety? And if so, how do you allow the anxiety to promote more socially conscious work while also not letting it hinder your experimentation, personal growth, and mental health? Lastly, what suggestions do y'all have for setting boundaries in academia? Since my work is very personal, it's sometimes hard to separate personal from professional when presenting on it. And I've been receiving a lot of inappropriate personal questions during Q&A sessions after artist talks that maybe I'm accidentally soliciting. Much love to the both of ya, Jay.
¿Quién es Jay? Estoy bien curioso.
Let's see. Do y'all ever look back at your artwork, research, and see things you disagree with now?
Yes.
Babs?
Yes.
Yeah, me too. Please, if you guys ever Google me, do not watch the PBS documentary they did with me in it. I am not that person anymore. I like say so many fucked up things. And on the same note, listen a year from now, a year from today, go back in the Latinos with Lunch archives and listen to how much we've changed. You know what I mean? I feel like it was to the point where I was even thinking, like, should we take like the first year of the podcast down just because the quality is bad, the sound is bad, and also we're hella problematic. I would never say a lot of the things that I said back then. Right. But then, you know, I thought, no, that's fucked up. Why? Like, that's really what we thought back then. And it's an opportunity for people to actually hear growth, you know, or the opposite in some cases.
Right.
Yeah. So does that cause you any anxiety?
No, I was pointed out recently the value of public learning, and I think that's mm-hmm. what we did.
Yes.
And I think owning that, it's important, because a lot of people, like, you know, like se arrepienten o lo borran, yeah, o lo quitan, but it's like, no, like, you know, like, we started around the time where cancel culture became a thing, and I'm surprised, you know, because of the sensitivity of it all, that we were not canceled, but also we owned our shit. We dealt with it when we were called out. We will read the letters, you know, like, it was never hiding. We're like, oh shit, don't say that on the, like, no, like, and editing was minimal, you know, in a lot of the episodes, precisely for that reason. No, it never caused me anxiety. I think it just shows that we're fucking human. And I did it recently. There's a famous like art history page. It's called Smart History, where they have a lot of those videos of where, like, they have curators go in front of the paintings and they talk about them and stuff. And I was commissioned to write an essay about José María Velasco. This was like 4 years ago, and this was based on a presentation I had in Mexico City in 2011. And I praise Velasco as, like, the greatest fucking artist, you know. And Velasco is a 19th century landscape artist that was working under Porfirio Diaz. I mean, there's a series of problems. And I never saw that. But I remember also thinking, like, that something wasn't sitting right. And I finally had the opportunity to write about him. You know, an essay is coming out next month. And Smart History asked me to do like a webinar, which you can find, and I can put the link on the website. But I did a webinar, and I talk about, okay, this is why it's important to talk about Velasco, but there's also all of these reasons why we have to be critical. And I even said that, like, this is almost like my, not apology, but this is me showing that that person that wrote about Velasco in 2011, it's a different person that is writing about Velasco. And it's okay, because we are taught these things. We are taught that Velasco is good, that art history is good, like all of these things that we grew up with. So the fact that us in the podcast have been learning publicly is not just a personal thing, you know, like it reflects a lot of problems in our fucking society. So we don't believe, and we didn't believe the things that we believe just because we wanted to, you know, like there are consequences of a lot of different things. So my scholarship and also our voices in the podcast definitely reflect that. It should never give you anxiety. You apologize when you have to apologize, you amend when you have to amend, and you change what you have to change, and you move forward, you know? I mean, it's just what it is, I think.
Yeah, that's why sometimes, you know, I think it's kind of fucked up when people go back into like comedians or celebrities' tweets and like, this is what they said 10 years ago. And you're like, yes, but obviously these people have grown. You can't hold them. You can't hold that shit against them. We're all fucking learning all the time. And I'm not giving people a pass, but also just, you know, think critically before you start canceling people as well, you know?
Right.
Because then you look like, then you're the one that's doing more harm, you know?
And plus, half of the fucking people that cancel other people, they don't even know their shit. They just know things superficially. And in order to truly cancel somebody, like, you need receipts. And a lot of people don't have those receipts. They just love to point the moral finger. And that's so fucking easy to do.
Yes, 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 yes. So I don't get any anxiety over stuff like this anymore. And I feel like maybe the first or second year of the podcast, I would be like, oh my God, I can't believe we said that on the podcast. People are going to drag us, or I'm going to regret saying that in the future. Girl, I don't remember what I ate this morning. Right. I don't remember what we said. Yes, when people come up to me and are like, oh yeah, last week on the show when you said this, I was like, girl, as soon as we're done recording, I format the memory card. It is wiped clean. I'm onto a whole new fucking server,
se
honey.
Like cassette.
I se borra el cassette. Yes. And that's because doing this podcast has given me the freedom to do that, to learn, to not be afraid to say the wrong things and think out loud. But I'm doing that. And I'm also want to say, like, I'm doing that, but I'm also trying not to, I'm trying to be less violent than like cisgender white men when they just say their opinion and play devil's advocate, right? Like,
right.
I'm being careful with my opinions based on all of the knowledge that I've gained from doing this over the years. I'm not just blatantly saying crazy, you know, like hurtful things. Maybe in the beginning I was, because I didn't understand what I was saying. So we're all growing, we're all learning. And if you can't even, if you haven't been canceled once, are you even doing anything, right? Come on. All right. And so lastly, suggestions for setting boundaries in academia. Girl,
ooh,
it's hard, but you can do it. My big thing now is like when people want me to respond immediately to emails, or I don't respond to emails or texts on Sundays now. That's my boundary. And I just tell people, and it's hard. Like right now I'm working on a piece for a production, for a TV production, and Hollywood, they don't care what day of the week it is. So I had to be like, sorry, I'm not answering your text messages on Sunday. Like, you just have to keep reminding people and they get mad. But after a while, people start respecting the boundaries.
Right.
And I don't know. It's hard when your work is so personal. I also don't know your gender. I know a lot of people feel more comfortable asking personal questions to women, or, you know, people that are not masculine presenting. So that could also be a factor with your Q&As and inappropriate questions.
Right.
But you'll find a way. The more you do these presentations, you'll find a way to redirect a question or cut somebody off in a nice way or in a polite way. I don't want to say nice. You don't have to be nice to anybody that's asking you inappropriate questions. But just like any comedian, you know, like they know how to handle hecklers, and they know comedians watch comedy. If you want to see how comedians set boundaries with their audience, it's amazing, because they need the audience to interact, but they also need them to react in the way that they want for their acts to work. So it's the same thing, you know?
And It's tough. I remember when I first presented in my big conference, I was told to cut my hair, to wear like a suit. I don't do that anymore. Like, yeah, I'm not going to show up like looking, you know.
Todo greñudo.
Como si me acabara de levantar como la chimoltrufia, güey. Pero, but it's just like, I don't care. Like, if people cannot see beyond, you know, like my hair, or people cannot see beyond my mannerisms, this presentation is not for you. And if you're going to come and attack me, like, again, I have receipts. So, and that's something that took me a while. So that goes again. The beginning was imposter syndrome. I feel like I didn't belong there. And I was like, oh, I don't know what I'm talking about. It takes a little bit. Academic boundaries, I'm still learning them because it's learning your position. I just got this TT and I know that there's new expectations about my job. One thing that I do everywhere I go, if it's a presentation on Zoom or if it's a live conference or if it's a class or if it's a fucking a faculty meeting, is to put my goals and my philosophy up front. I'm here for students. That's it. Like, I don't care what's happening. I don't care what's going on. I'm learning this way because it's going to help me in the classroom. I'm teaching this way because it's going to help me in the classroom. I'm doing this type of research because it's going to help me in the classroom. And I think that allows for certain boundaries to be born, you know, like organically, to grow organically. And I'm really upfront about that. Like, I'm always about students and how they learn. And to me, that's super important. And that's allowed for some boundaries. But it's complicated, and it changes in every different realm. We talk about academia, but like an English department functions differently than an art department that functions differently in the architecture department. So it's knowing your environment as well.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. We have just one more letter that I was planning on doing. Can we just do it really quick?
Vámonos. Let's do it. Okay.
You want to read it or should I?
No, me toca.
Dale.
Sara Chalupas. I grew up in Las Vegas, part of the mid-80s Midwest exodus. Oh, we live off of Charleston. When if you went west past Rainbow Boulevard, you were literally going to Red Rock. I am a proud graduate of the Clark County School District. I'm a few years older than Favi, and I too have experienced the stale yet soggy chalupa, hot lunches, and other mystery food situations.
Yes, French bread pizza,
French bread pizza Mondays, and hamburger with bun stick out painfully for me. I now live in Washington State, and when I tell people I grew up in Las Vegas, they often look at me like they can't believe that there are people who actually live there. Hello, who do you think is cooking your food and cleaning your room and dealing your poker hand when you visit? And these people have families and households, which means grocery stores and schools and churches. And the new casino? Carpenters, painters, plumbers, duh. My question for you is, what are some of the things that you know and appreciate because you have grown up, lived, and worked in Las Vegas? I love to hear from people who have lived and worked in Vegas and if it's part of why I started listening to you in the first place. I grew up knowing more about sports betting than it's probably healthy for a young teen. I grew up learning to wait in the buffet line and filling that time by looking for credits, remaining on an abandoned slot machine. I learned a lot of weird things just because of the atmosphere. Thanks so much for all your hard work, Sarah.
Oh my gosh. What are some things that you know and appreciate because you grew up in Vegas? This is actually a very exciting and exclusive announcement at the end of the episode of Latinos for Lunch. But stay tuned, anybody that's still listening. I'm working with a group out of Austin, Texas. They are going to create a monograph of my work. I had to Google what that meant when they asked me to do it. But it's like an artist book, so it's going to be kind of like not really a retrospective, but there'll be some essays in there. There'll be my work, and it's going to be this like compendium of like the last 10 years of everything that I've made. And it's going to be all printed on a risograph, which is amazing because it's, you know what a risograph is, Babs?
I have no clue.
It's like a close cousin, like a first cousin to the printer, like the copy machine printer.
Nice.
So you can almost, you can print in layers because you can put different inks in the risograph to like have a screen printing effect, you know? So it's kind of like lo-fi, but it like celebrates the materials, which is like what my work does. Like it's, you know, it looks like it's a, it's printed, you know, which is really cool. And so the Rizzo Rizzo, which consists of three artists, came to visit. Shout out to them. And I showed them around Vegas last week. And we had some interesting conversations. And I guess I never really talked about this, but like you go to places like Portland, Oregon or Austin, Texas, and they pride themselves on being weird, you know? Like, right. Keep Austin weird, keep Portland weird, but they're the opposite of that when you go there. You're like, oh, this is just like gentrification 101, you know? And so when we were talking about that, they're like, yeah, like Vegas is truly weird.
It is.
Like, it's the fucking weirdest place to be from and to live because of the notions that people have about Las Vegas. But then when you're actually here, you're like, oh my gosh, this is wild, because it's, you have the tourist part of Vegas, which serves all these people from the Midwest or from wherever, a lot of people from California that drive in. So you have that part of the strip that the locals kind of stay away from. And then you have like the people that are paisas, you know, like the people that we grew up around. And, you know, I've traveled a lot over the years, and it just made me realize also how diverse Vegas was because of, yeah, because of the casinos, because of all the immigrants here. You know, there was a huge boom in the 80s. A lot of Central Americans moved here. A lot of Vietnamese folks, a lot of Thai people moved here. So it was, it's a real, and then there's also like, of course, a huge Black history here with entertainers and with, you know, the west side of town. And then you have the boom in the 90s with all the construction workers that came. So there's like so many immigrants here getting the job done and operating it.
And it's different. Like, I mean, being in Chicago, which is like the most segregated city, thinking about Vegas so different. Like, it's just, yes, it is segregated also, but it's just, it's,
yes,
it feels so different. It feels so different than going to places like Chicago, where like historically they were, you know, they grew up as segregated cities, you know, and because it's just the boom of this immigrant waves, it's so much more recent, it functions very differently. So you get a completely different experience, which is something that I miss. I miss a lot.
Yeah, so I love Vegas because my family's here. I love Vegas because it's my home. It's where I'm from. I love the desert. I'm a desert person. So,
same.
I mean, you know, when I did go to Guatemala, my skin did feel refreshed and nice, and I felt at home. But
your genes are like, oh, this is where we're from.
Yeah, but also I was like, I'm not wearing the right pants for this situation. I was just sweaty the whole time. And so, but because I think my body's just used to being in the desert. I love the desert. And I don't know, I feel like I'll always have either a home base here, or of course I'll always have ties to Vegas. And if you ever come here and you want the strip experience, you want to go spend thousands of dollars and go to clubs and stuff, cool, do that. But if you're not that kind of person, you can also come here and hang out in the neighborhoods and eat you know, real food from real people. You know what I mean? Not, yeah, just, you know, the buffets are fun and cute, not right now during COVID, but you know, in the before COVID times. But there's just such an amazing community of people, you know, making it and working for the locals and not working necessarily for the tourists.
Correct.
And that's, I love that about Vegas.
Ah, yeah, I miss it. I miss the food, man. My Japanese curry.
Ooh, which is, girl, my, you know, they opened one on the west side. They opened your Japanese curry spot on the west side to go, so you can get it to go over there too.
Yeah.
It's oh my God, it's so bomb. Okay. Well, that's the end of the listener letters for today, Babs. We did it.
I can't believe it. Oh my God, oh my God.
Did you want to play the last clip of audio?
Now I put together some friends of the podcast.
Okay.
And let's play it.
Babelito y Fabi Fab, les quiero agradecer de todo corazón por este podcast. Mi nombre es Alonso, soy un radio oyente o podcast oyente, LOL, desde Salt Lake City, Utah, or Eastern
Bullshit
Land. I am a big fan of your show. I am going to miss you deeply, and Latinos Who Lunch has meant so much for me. You have really helped nuance the conversation of Latinidad and what it means to be a Latinx person in the U.S. today. Also, you are contextualizing so much history, rich history, nuanced history into our daily lives, and I deeply appreciate you for that. I know that your podcast has helped me think through a lot of not only personal issues, but also research, and I think that's been really mind-blowing for me, the conversations about authenticity, the conversations about art and, you know, cultural iconographies have really helped me, like, nuance the conversation, even for myself, about what I believed it means to be a Latino in the U.S. I want to keep this short, so thank you so much for everything you've done. I wish you the best of luck in your next endeavors, and trust that I'll be listening to your episodes time and time again,
Alonso.
Because I don't think...
See you in Utah, girl.
Thank you so much again. Un abrazote. Se cuidan. Y muchas gracias nuevamente.
Hey, Fabi and Babelito. This is Mariana here.
Mari.
I just wanted to say thank you so, so much for this amazing show that has brought so much representation.
No puedo, no puedo.
I am so proud of you. I'm so happy that this is out there and feels like a gateway to so much more great content. I'm also super privileged to have been able to be one of the people that got to be one of your guests and have a great conversation and meal with you all. I feel like I'm part of this really wonderful circle of people, of scholars, of artists, of thinkers, and general awesome people. I wish you could go on forever, but I wish you the best in everything else that's coming next. I can't wait to keep working with both of you in whatever way that looks like. I love you both. Love
hello, hello, you. Hello. I am Luis Rodriguez. I'm a PhD candidate in political science at Johns Hopkins
Come
University.
On,
I'm defending
nerd.
My dissertation next week, and I am sure that I survived doing a PhD thanks to Latinos for Lunch. You gave me the space to remember that there are fun and important things beyond my research and my dissertation. Latinos for Lunch made me question a lot of my assumptions and privileges, and you also opened my curiosity to new things like music, artists, books, activists, and food. I have to accept that I'm still skeptical about Babelito's bologna tacos, though. I was very lucky that life brought you to Sorry Baltimore you. Years ago, where I tricked you into being my friends with mole and mezcal. And I am very grateful for trips to Oaxaca and great. Vegas and middle of nowhere Pennsylvania. Sure, I am sad that Latinos Who Lunch is coming to an end, but I can wait for you to pause and bask in all of the love you created with the podcast. And I can wait to see you again, comadres. Quoting Katia and Trixie, goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Juice with Jake and Favi. Juice with Jake and Favi.
Oh, my gosh. This
that could be the
mess.
New show. You know, that could be the next thing. We are looking for a third. just kidding. Favi, I love you so much.
Girl, I'm trying to find a couple. What are you doing?
My life in so many ways that you may not even realize or know. You're such a fantastic artist, and your art makes me happy. Like, you don't even know as well. This podcast has made me feel accepted, loved, and represented. You're such a great person. Even though you talk shit every Thursday, you know, we still love you.
Shut up, bitch. Nobody likes
anyway,
you.
I'm so excited to see what you're going to do in the future. I'm so excited to be a part of it somehow. If you need some extra hands, aww, I'm there. You know I am. And I just want to say that we live, laugh, love you.
Love Bye. You, Jakey.
So listen, I've been in denial that this is actually ending. Not until maybe like last week did I really accept it. And so I am really sad, but I'm also really happy because I got to experience your podcast and your gifts and your projects for the past 5 years. And I really appreciate you all sharing that and letting us, you know, starting so many discussions, you know, from the podcast and that translated into our everyday lives or my everyday lives. I took them into the classroom with my students and,
he has the best
and that
voice.
Was really, that was really
here.
Fun and engaging. And so I really appreciate all the work you did and all the discussions you started. And I'm going to keep that going. And I hope that whatever you all have coming up is successful and that you're happy, most of all, that you're happy.
That'll never happen, bro. Thanks.
Lo siento.
Hola, querida familia de Latinos to Lunch.
Oh, los my saluda God, Rosa mamá con el cariño bitch.
De siempre. Conocí a Latinos to Lunch a través de Babelito.
Wow.
Y junto con Fabi me dieron el espacio y la oportunidad para compartir con ustedes un par de episodios y conocer a esta extraordinaria familia. Latinos to Lunch matters porque creó una gran plataforma que nos dio voz cuando nadie nos escuchaba, abordando temas tan relevantes de identidad, representación y familia, con esa chispa de gracia y humor que tanto los caracteriza. Claro, y acompañado siempre de un buen taco. Y bueno, como todo lo que empieza termina, hoy se cierra ese capítulo de 5 divertidos años y los despedimos con un gran aplauso. Honor a quien honor merece.
Hey, aww. I'm Annette Rodriguez, currently Annette. In a little mill town in North Carolina, but originally from Silver City, New Mexico. I'm so happy to say that I've made a friend and a companion of the Latinos to Lunch podcast for years. It's taught me, it's made me laugh hard as fuck. It's brought forth the importance of analysis and critique away from the basics of representation.
Yes.
And in this last year in particular, Favi and Babelito have felt like family, sharing their abilities to navigate this really difficult year through art practice and through reading and writing, through cultural analysis, and mostly through love for our families, both born into and chosen. And I'm getting a little choked up because I'm going to miss having their voices with me on road trips, having them accompany me on long walks. I love you both. Thank you so much for everything you've given us. Thank you for your time and for your insights. Yeah. Me and my family love and adore you.
I'm Daisy Quesadureña, and I'm a visual artist in Ogapo Ogwe, also known as Santa Fe, New Mexico. Y Latinos to Lunch matters because they foster and create community beyond the singular individual. They see, recognize, and talk to the present and history, relating it to the day-to-day of art and life. They have shared so much hope and space with their listeners and everyone they meet, always, always, always talking about important things.
Aw, thanks, Daisy.
Wepa, wepa, hey. Wepa. This is Angelica from Balloon. And I just want to say I love you both.
We love
I remember
you.
When Tishartina asked Jose and I to give a shout out to your podcast a while ago. And I had no idea what Latinos to Lunch was. But a few days after that, I was curious. So I started listening to the podcast and I was immediately hooked. Y cayó un abismo de pasión y lo demás es historia. Now you're not only my favorite podcast, but you're also family, and I'm aww. So grateful to call you both dear friends. You've been with me in so many moments when I needed you the most, whether you know it or not, and you've helped me see and understand things about myself and my relationship to my culture that I've struggled for many years to understand. You also inspire me to not only make and create new things, but also to continuously challenge and question everything around me. All of that while making me laugh like no one else. And I don't know how you do it, but you do it. And I'm going to miss you both so, 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 so much. But you're both incredibly talented, and I'm also super excited for this new chapter and to see and hear what you come up with next. Los adoro, los quiero hasta el infinito. Un abrazo. Chao, chao, chao.
Oh, wepa, wepa.
Bueno, this is La Judy from Albuquerque. Oh, I'm sending amor y paz to Babelito and Favi Fav on their last podcast. Latinos to Lunch is a one-of-a-kind podcast bringing new Latinx perspectives to a diverse audience with humor and sensitivity. When Babelito was my roomie, I got to see firsthand how the podcast was being produced in its infancy. It was very exciting. I was thrilled to be on an early episode to share my opinions on Latinx social standing now and in the past. Plus, I got to cook for Babelito, share my family recipes, and eat dinner with him. It was lots of fun. I'm signing off, but I'm not going away.
Oh, I love you, Judy.
Hello, 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 Favelito. This is Josue Ramirez. I'm coming to y'all from the Rio Grande Valley in South Texas. I'm a big, big fan. And I'm so thankful for everything that I learned through Latinos Who Lunched, all the laughs that y'all shared with me, and then getting to know Favi as a Piñaterex artist. And
come on, Piñaterex.
And just getting to meet, you know, one of my favorite podcasters in person and just hanging out with them. That was
we watched super, The Circle super amazing for hours so in my Airbnb.
The collaboration, the companionship. And then Favelito, Favi, sorry, Favelito, you know, I also received your support. You sent me some research around piñatas, and it I really did that. Help. You know, shape the work that I was doing. And so I'm very thankful for that too.
Damn, can you send me that?
Yeah, I just want to wish you all the best on y'all's new endeavors. We're going to miss you. I'm going to miss you, but I'm going to definitely listen to all of the Latinos Lunch episodes. So y'all know I'm going to be doing that. And yeah, I just wish you all the best. And I'll be keeping up with all y'all's work through Instagram and then the YouTube. So take it easy, y'all. Much love to Latinos Lunch.
Hi, my name is Irene Mata, and I think Latinos Who Lunch matters because Fabi and Babelito created a space for our community to engage in issues that matter to us. They created a platform for asking questions about who we are and what we believe in. While making us laugh and feel at home, they challenged us to grow and educate ourselves, and in the process, inspired us to be better. Ultimately, Latinos Who Lunch embodies the spirit of making familia from scratch, and I'm grateful for the 5 years they've given us.
Thank you, Fabi, Fab, and Babelito, por haber sido mis amigos imaginarios cada jueves. Latinos Who Lunch really had held me up. As a Peruvian living this in Chicago, I never felt part of any community till I randomly searched in Spotify Latinx podcasts, and I found you. And I fell in un laberinto.
Yes, laberinto. Oh, I love that.
All the content for I'm going to start using from that. From Fabi dragging listeners to his real discussions about racism in our community, I learned that us Whiteinos have to work to dismantle the systems that benefit us. My Babelito, I'm so grateful I found you and your 12,000 Café Tacuba concert. Thanks for working hard on demolishing the myths created by the Empire. You two will be missed. Hopefully one day Fabi will come to Chicago and I can make you both Peruvian ceviche con su tamotito, okay?
Yes.
Bye.
Yes.
And let me tell you, girl, that ceviche is out of control.
Oh, my gosh. That was very touching. Thank you so much. Very nice surprise, Babelito.
There's many more to come, but we'll play the rest of the messages from some special peoples in the next episode.
Cool. Exciting. Yeah. All right. Let's take a little break. And then you have recommendations?
No, I think this week it's good to sign off without recommendations.
Well, let's end the show. Great. Go buy the coloring book if you haven't bought it. Come on. You know, do your part, everybody. Get them out of my closet, okay? I'm out of the closet. Let's get these books out of the closet.
Everybody out.
Everybody out. Atrévete. So, yeah, I have a couple really quick recommendations. De Colores is back.
Yes.
De Colores Collective is back. And they have a Patreon. And so, you know, we love everybody over at De Colores Radio. They're my fucking family. You know this. Eva and Pat, specifically, I've hung out with them in their house, in their mom's house. We're really close. And they're really doing amazing work in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And so if you're in Dallas, you already know their presence, specifically in Oak Cliff. They're incredible. They're doing an amazing work. So go to patreon.com/decoloresco and sign up to be part of their Patreon, you know. And so that's my big recommendation. And then also one of my favorite comedians, Z-Way, now has a show on Showtime. There's one episode out so far, and it is fucking brilliant. And if you don't know who Z-Way is, Z-I-W-E, Google it, loca. She did this series on Instagram last year that was awkward as fuck, funny as hell. Yeah, Google Z-Way. So the Colores Co., don't forget to sign up for their Patreon. Don't forget to buy our coloring book. And that's it. Anything else, Babs?
That's it.
All right. Well, we'll be back in a couple of weeks with our final episode. We're gonna read just another listener letter or two. And now, I guess, listen to the audio clips that Babelito surprised us with. And yeah, and then we'll leave Latinos Who Lunch online as long as we can. Again, thank you all for listening over the years. And, you know, this isn't goodbye forever. You know, we're still alive. We still might come together for some special occasions. So yes. You never know in the distant future. So, you know, if you stay subscribed to our channels or our personal Instagrams as well, we will keep you all updated.
So, Lido Pimienta, if you're listening, if you still want to come on the podcast, we'll put that special episode for you, baby.
Oprah, email me back, girl. Okay, yeah. Visit us at latinoswholunch.com. Buy the coloring book at latinoswholunch.com/coloringbook. And please, if you get a moment, leave us a review, 5 stars.
5 stars solamente.
Because the more reviews we have, the more visible we are. And
visibility leads to representation, and representation matters.
Today's episode was produced by Justin Favela and Emmanuel Ortega with production assistance from Maite Sosa. The music you're listening to now is by the band Balloon. I'm Favi Fav.
And this is Babelito.
Bye.
Ciao, ciao, ciao.